With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they cannot get to work. Danny, oh, fuck that up. You're not Danny, you're
Joel. That's all right,
Joel.
Let's keep going. I'm Joel.
Oh, no. I've just been doing something with Danny Ward and I said Danny a lot.
And you can't forget about him.
And the script is right in front of me and it says Danny about 10 times. That's weird, isn't it? That's it, yeah. So, it's Joel's here.
Hey, Joel's here.
Joel's here. You know Danny.
I know Danny. I've met Danny a couple of times.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, I like Danny. He's a good guy.
We've started...
But I'm not him.
No, you're not. You're not. You're not him. But
I wish I was.
Do you?
Yeah.
Why?
He's really tall.
He is. Oh, have you got an issue about not being tall?
No, I am quite tall, but... Not, I'm not
you'd
Danny
like
Ward.
To be, you'd like to be a bit taller. Danny Ward.
I'm like Mark's, 6 foot 1.
Yeah, but I'm Danny Ward's height, so.
Yeah, but you don't wear it as well as Danny Ward.
What do you mean I don't wear it?
When Danny Ward walks into a room, you know Danny Ward's in that room. You sort of shuffle in. You know,
shuffle
in? You're a bit stooped. Yeah.
Stooped.
I think people out there that have met you and Danny Ward, they would all guess that Danny Ward was about 6 inches taller than you.
6 inches taller. I'm taller than him.
No way.
Yes, I bloody well am.
No way.
Yes, we've had this discussion and we measured. That's actually true. Yeah, I was a little bit taller.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Well,
all right.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, he's got better posture than me, I think.
Definitely. Definitely.
I've got scoliosis, mate. So
don't have a
pop. So we've got a little project, Danny Ward and I, and previous guest Gareth Richards, and so I'll talk about that in a couple of weeks, probably maybe next week even. So,
exciting!
Yeah. Oh, it's bloody exciting! It's very exciting. What's been happening, Joel? Got any news?
Not really. I'm still out there running all the time.
Out there running. I started running, Joel.
Oh, well done, mate.
Yeah, because I go to the gym and I keep fit, but I don't do running. I don't like running, never have. My ankles click, and that puts me off.
Just wear headphones.
Constantly. Oh, yeah, good point. But I wore my basketball shoes for the run, and my ankles didn't click. So I think it's all to do with ankle support.
Oh.
Yeah, so I started running. I'm not very good at it yet. I did about a half hour running.
That's
very
good.
Slow pace, very slow. Struggled up hills.
That's all right. Is it? You got plenty of time to get good.
Yeah,
at it?
I'm going to do it every night. Well, not every night.
Oh, mate, well done.
Why not? Fine, fair. Thanks very much, Joel. Yeah, I had a running joke. It didn't work particularly well. I would have been a long distance running champion if it wasn't for those meddling Kenyans.
I think I've seen you do that joke. I think it's a good joke.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's been a long time since I did it. I think just as soon as you say the Kenyans, people go, oh, is he having a... Is this racist? It's not racist. There's Kenyans are very good at long distance running, so they're the best example.
When you just said there that you had a running joke, I thought you were going to say it was like, oh, that's something in that, mate. There you go.
As in a running joke?
Yeah.
I think that's been done to death, mate. I think that's been done to bloody death. But,
Probably
you know...
Has.
Yeah. So there you go. Last week, who did we have last week? Oh, I'll tell you what, Joel, we were just discussing before we came on the podcast, on the phone, we were chatting, and we were just saying how the days are just bloody flying by, aren't they?
In lockdown. I know. It feels like I'm always about to talk to you on the phone.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? But I can't remember who was last week. I felt like was it Gareth? It was, yes. Gareth. It was Gareth Richards. Oh, lovely stuff. That was a good episode. So I hope you all enjoyed that. If you haven't, well, you would have enjoyed it. If you haven't heard it, go back.
Go and listen,
yeah. Any feedback at Jokes with Mark across all social media. And this week we have got Scott Bennett.
Hey.
Scotty boy. Scott Bennett is here. Take him. So are there any bits that you were working on that you couldn't quite get working? Any bits that you liked?
Well, there is a couple of bits. This is for that show or just generally?
Anything you want, mate.
Oh, I've got a couple of examples, actually. I mean, I'll give you one bit that I really like. And on paper, I think it's a really good joke. And actually, Gary Delaney gave me the topper.
Okay.
So I'll tell you the joke. So basically, I talk about a story about being on holiday when we took the kids on holiday, and basically we got to the hotel late, so we just went for a meal, and I sort of talk about going for a meal with my family now and my young kids. I always have a fantasy where I just want to be able to leave the restaurant without apologising to the staff on the way out, not for the for their behaviour, just for the state of the table, right? I said, because we leave that table. I said, I tell you, we wear hoodies to go to dinner now because we pop them up on the way out like nonces being bundled into a police van, because the shame of how we've left the table is beyond reproach. Like, so the joke was, I said, oh, if you want to know the state we leave that table, it's a bit like America leaves a war zone. I said, like, there's oil everywhere, you know, people are on the floor wailing and praying. And I said, the only difference is that we're happy to pay the bill. So that was a joke. And I really love that joke as a bit of sort of wordplay or sort of clever writing. But it used to get nothing. And he didn't get anything in any of the... And I think Warwick's...
Why do you think that is? Do you think they just missed the actual point you're making?
I think what it is I think they see me as a certain type of character on stage, as a certain type of person. So it's sort of affable dad, frustrated dad, sort of likeable, approachable, accessible.
Every man.
And which sounds like a clothing range for BHS, doesn't it? Every man. but the thing is, then when I started doing stuff that had a political flavour to it, I think they pulled back on it.
Aye.
And that's how I... Cause,
like it came out of nowhere, you
mean? Yeah,
meant.
And it came out of nowhere. And why are you talking about war zones? And why are you talking about...
Yeah, because you've gone through the whole just chat, like observational about taking your family out for a meal. I suppose it is a bit of a swerve.
Yeah, and I suppose it's just I enjoyed there's oil everywhere. You know what I mean? There's like little... It made me laugh. But yeah, it just didn't translate through the filter of my voice, you see. So, like, there's been other jokes before, and I'll tell you this one. This is a true
story. What was the Gary Delaney topper?
The Gary Delaney topper was the only difference is you pay the bill.
Oh, okay.
So that was his topper.
Yeah.
But here's the interesting...
Did that work?
No, because it lost steam on the earlier bit, you see.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's a weird... And I tell you, I had another routine. This isn't in the show, but I'll tell you this one. I've got a couple that had this same effect, right? So this is one I tried at a new material night. And this happened in real life. And it really made me laugh. And see what you think. So it's a true story. This is in 2001. So this was... when was it?
Wow.
Yeah, back November. November
19 years ago.
Yeah, November 2001. My wife, Gemma, and I, we were flying to New York. So it was straight after the... terrorist attacks. Everything was a bit uneasy and a bit weird, and flight, and we got a cheap flight, obviously. We'd never been to New York before. So we got on the plane, and obviously everyone was a bit of high alert, and everyone was a little bit tense, and we were sat there ready to go, and a Middle Eastern looking guy came on his own to the flight, right? Came on his own, sat down a couple of seats in front of us. No one else with him. He had the seat on his own, and we took off and everything. And sort of through the flight, he kept getting up and going to the toilet. Now, yeah, exactly. Now you can see. So straight away, there's an element. This is complete. I'm not embellishing this for comic effect, right? So everyone was looking. Yeah. Everyone was looking round, and everyone, you could feel people were trying to read the books. They were trying to watch the telly, but you could tell every time he got up, everyone looked down the aisle, and he came back to the toilet and he sat down again 20 minutes. And then it got to the point where Gemma nudged me and said, and sort of indicated. And I sort of said to her, you know, words to the effect of, let's not be those people to judge, you know, to make those snap decisions. You know, it's as equally as difficult for people who have Middle Eastern appearance in this current climate as it is for anyone else. It's more difficult, you know, because it's brought through an atmosphere of suspicion and tension. So anyway, as she said, just forget about it. Look, it's ridiculous. I said, this is not, you know, there's so much security now. You'd have to be a lunatic to try anything now, right? Anyway, about 5 minutes later, 5 minutes later, he gets up again. Now I'm getting a bit nervous, right? Because he got up when the seatbelt signs came off, and I was like, that was the MO. That was the MO for, you know, I kept expecting him to open the overhead locker and put a red bandana on or something. I was shitting, and he started to really panic me. And I was sitting, and I'm looking around, and I'm thinking, right, well, maybe this is how it happens. You know, no one alerts the aerostat. You can't, you know, is it bad for me to look, you know, like I'm borderline xenophobic or racist just to, you know, is it say it, see it, sorted? Before that slogan was existed, you know, but you know what I'm saying. So I was like, do I flag this? Anyway, I was sort of plucking up. What do I say? How do you even word that? I don't like the look of. You can't say that. That makes you sound hideous. So anyway, he comes back out the toilet and he sits down, and I sort of look round for an aerostess or something. And then this was the best one. He puts his headphones on, mate, starts watching his thing, and Gemma taps me and says, "It's all right. You don't need to worry. He's watching Mr. Bean." You see, it's a lot of a build-up for a laugh, isn't it? But that is totally true, and I just love the fact that Mr. Bean is the, you know, what's that saying?
International
sort of accent. He's watching Mr. Bean. We're all right, everyone. Stand down. He's watching Mr. Bean, I laugh for ages about that, and I've tried it on stage. Nothing, mate. Nothing. But you laughed. You found it funny. It's so silly.
So what is the reaction when you do it? So there's no laughs on the route to the.
No,
punch.
Of course not. It's one of them, innit? Where they looking at me going, "Is he a massive racist?" You know, and people.
Yeah, well, so yeah, maybe they're getting tense because of that.
But then I always thought, you know what it's like. Tension equals a bigger laugh, doesn't it?
Supposed to, but there can be too much, I think.
Tension equals a bigger laugh. Mate, you've got us at knife point. I'm not going to laugh after this. You've got a bomb strapped to your body.
I don't know, yeah, because that's an interesting one, because that is funny.
Yeah, it is.
But so you got one thing where, because we're talking on the podcast and I know you, and you said it's true, I totally believed it was true.
Yeah, it is.
So that's why I found that particularly funny, I think, because that happened.
Yeah.
But with an audience, sometimes if you go, "This is a true story," they go,
"No, it's not." Yeah, yeah. So I know what you mean. And I always think that about comedy. I always think there has to be a grain of truth, or there has to be, it has to be so just a statement. And that I told that as a, this happened. And I think the difference I find is that in Edinburgh, that sort of stuff works better.
Right, yeah.
Because once
they're willing to see it.
There's an element of, you know.
So did you only try it in club gigs?
Yeah, I only tried it in club gigs. And I never tried it in a theatre room. And I think sometimes You're right. I always wrestle with that in comedy because I'm an embellisher of the truth and I'm an exaggerator. And when the audience sniffs that it's gone too far, I'm acutely aware of that. And I've got that in some of my routines where I know I'm pushing it a bit. And the funniest stuff I've got is where I'm telling the truth and then I'm going, imagine this, or I'm twisting it to then go off on a flight of fancy. Once you've built the framework and you've... I think that's the skill of comedy. So, if you've built the framework and go, this is the truth, but then this is the fantasy, and they're with you on that, you can be as funny as you like then. I think it's just if you go, I've got a mate who, you know, stuck a snake up his arse, or I don't know. Do you know what I mean? That's not true either. But, you know, do you know what I'm saying? That you've got like those... comics will go like, you know, and then this happened. And you're like, well, it didn't, mate, did it? It clearly didn't happen. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then you lose all, everything you say after that loses any credibility.
So with that bit, because obviously that's such a big build-up for one punch. Yeah. Did you ever try and sort of go further with it?
What do you mean?
Because you could you not sort of give another example of some, like, what next, or another example of something tense, and then an example, oh, it's okay, he's not gonna mug me, he's got a such and such t-shirt on.
Oh, like different, yeah, we see. I didn't think we were workshopping it. Now I know what you mean. I think that could be quite good. But like, you know, because if someone came up to you with a knife and said,
yeah,
and then, but you look down, and in the other hand, he's got a apple, or a, you'd be like, he's not mummy, he's just out for an impromptu picnic. You know, that could be the...
He's just peeling.
He's just peeling on the move, and angry, and he needs my mobile phone as a light. You see, that could work. Maybe that's what I needed to do. See, this is why your joke caliber writing got you a mock the week, my friend. You've just unlocked that bit of material. I think I backed off it. I was a bit scared of it, that joke, and I backed off it because it didn't fit with the rest of my stand-up. But I really like, there is something, I have got it in my material, I've got it underlined under a bit. I've got that bit as a bit of stuff where I'm talking about awkwardness or social tension or suspicion. Because I've got another story, if you want to hear this, that I've tried. I don't know, shall I just waffle on? I don't know.
I've got
another one. Again, this is totally true, right? So this again is something that's... These fit in a show that I haven't yet done. So this is like, I was out... When I do gigs sometimes, I go and find somewhere to walk round in the day. I mean, you've been for your one walk, haven't you? So you know the joy of it. And I go and I go and find somewhere to walk. So I went and walked. I was in Preston. And, you know, where was it now? It was a while ago when the Frog still existed. So that's a while ago.
I mean, I didn't even gig there.
Yeah, and I went for a walk round this park, and... Because I didn't know where I was, I just got in this country park, so I was in civilian clothes, had a bottle of water, and I thought, I'm just going to walk around this park, and I just set off, and it was beautiful. And I walked around this park, and I passed a group of youth on a bench, all smoking weed, and they sort of looked at me, and I carried on walking, and then I got right round this park, and I didn't know where I was going, and I got back to where I came from, and I thought, well, that only took 25 minutes. I want to go again. It's such a lovely day, but I don't know where I am. So I took the same route. So I carried on walking again, and I walked past the same weed-smoking youth, and I carried on. And as I was walking up the path, I felt the presence of someone behind me, and it was one of these lads. And he shouted, he said, "Good afternoon, officer." And I said, "I'm not a policeman." And he says, "Well, what are you doing?" And I says, "Well, I'm just out for a walk, mate." And he says, "Are you undercover?" I was like, "Well, no." I said, "I'm just out for a walk." And then he went, "Are you a pervert or something?" I was like, this is genuinely how the conversation went. And I went, "What do you mean am I a pervert?" I said, "You know, I'm just out for a walk." And then he said, "Who does that? Who walks round, mate? No one does that. What are you doing? I'm going to ring the police." And I felt like going, "Well, I was the police a minute ago, mate. Make your mind up." But then, so I actually got back. That whole interaction happened, and I just thought, like, you can't even go for a... This is the thing about this tension and suspicion we're in. You can't even go for a walk as a man on your own without looking like a paedophile.
With your dick out.
Yeah, you can't like walk with a man shuffling along with your trousers around your ankles. But this is the thing. If I'd have been in Lycra, walking, fine. If I'd have had a dog lead, even no dog, mate, just shouting for an imaginary dog, fine.
Yeah.
If I'd have been hand in hand with a child, even if it wasn't my child, they'd have let me go. But because you're on your own, element of suspicion. So that is, that's, I've tried that as a routine, but this is, that's a long way to go from being a stand-up routine. That's more a thing that happened. And this is the problem sometimes. That fits in the same category as that one on the plane. That's not my style of punchiness that really works, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, you'd have to get, because I feel like with the conversation part, that you can, there's laughs there.
Yeah.
Like there's a nice sort of, you could, as long if you get the wording right, you could get a few beats of laughter out of the exchange. Because I like the callback that he said, call the police. There's definitely a way you can make that, a minute ago, I was the police. Or you say, oh, I haven't got my phone on me. Or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, and I looked down, he had a knife and he was peeling some fruit.
Yeah, well, yeah,
and he was watching Mr. Bean. There you go. I mean, it's just interesting because I have bits of stand-up like that. I am genuinely at the moment trying to write stand-up that isn't about being a dad in his 40s. That is my sort of goal now, is to write stand-up that doesn't sound like me. That's my next task for the next few years.
Okay.
And I'm
to make a point.
Well, no, just to come away from what I do normally, because I want to drag my audience with me. I want to develop as a comic and go for, I think sometimes as a comic, if you're doing stuff about family, it's fine, but and you can write stuff that's original, but sometimes it's low-hanging fruit or it's treading ground that's been done before. I want to go for stuff that's more niche or more, like in my new show, I had a whole bit about fantasizing about being in a monastery and being a monk and living like a monk. That's in the new show, and that works really, really well because it's something completely different from what I normally do.
And I guess you can also link into it from what you normally do nicely, because obviously that's the opposite of where you live now.
Yes, and I think, like, I mean, there's no sort of, there's a weird sort of twist in that I'm spending all day in a shed, deprived of social contact. That is how I will key in the rewrite of the show to that bit. You know, I'm already halfway there to being a monk. I did 3 months of self-isolation. I'm overqualified, mate. Do you know what I mean? I'm already got the skills to be a monk. If I start receding, I'm in. You know, so there's bits there where I can write it in. So like this whole thing is like a live canvas at the moment. But like I've always find with my stuff is that it's got to fit my voice. It's got to blend with the stuff I've already got. Otherwise, it just sounds like me doing an impression of another comic.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's a bit jolty.
Yes,
going from one bit to the other.
Yeah, but when you can drag the audience with you, and you bring them in, my God, it's an amazing feeling. Because I had a routine. I'll tell you this as a third. This is the other one I've written down. I had a routine that I tried in my last Edinburgh show, and I couldn't get it to work, and I've got it to work now. So it was a routine.
Oh, cool.
It was a routine about going to a hand car wash. Now. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's one of the car washes where you sit there and they clean the car around you. So I'm sat in the car and all these people are washing the car around me. Now, that was a whole routine about how awkward it is and how sexually charged it is when they open the door and you're sat there with your money. And it's like some weird transaction. So already you're laughing at that concept, which is great. So it was that whole thing of the weird sort of subservient, I've got staff or something, and I had the kids in the kids in the car, so it's like a weird human safari, and it never worked until I put it in the context of this show. So it comes off the back of me going for a massage and not like being touched, and it's all about personal space, which obviously again is interesting now with the coronavirus. So there's still relevant themes in there. So I put it in this show off the back of that, and straight away it worked. Straight away it started to work because it felt like not a piece about going to a car wash. It felt, it was framed within, I can't relax. I can't relax because I don't like things being done for me. And then I'm, and it's amazing how just changing that frame, reframing that, makes it. And then the bits from then was about the state of my car and about the shame of it and about, and then the bit after that was like how, you know, I'm watching other men do the job that I should be doing, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And like, the one thing now with the coronavirus is we're all having to wash our own cars, which has tilted that on its head a bit, hasn't it? And so then that whole thing goes into...
I'm not going to be washing my car during coronavirus.
Have you got a car? Oh, you're just not going out there? No, I know what you mean.
No, I'm not going to be washing it. I don't care. If you've got a drive.
Yeah.
It's
a gravel one, 4 miles long. I'm only joking. Of course it's not.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah.
When you did that, when you went from putting it, so that you had it in, were you just doing it in New Material Nights or had you tried it in your club
set? I had it in New Material Nights, and how I had it in my previous show, I'm trying to think how I framed it differently. I had it in a different way. I had it in a different, it wasn't about me in that sort of context. I'm trying to think now how I framed it.
Did you change the wording of the bit, or it just was literally just
I've changed the run-up to it, and I've changed the way I am and who I am in the bit. I've put myself in the bit. It was just an observational bit before about being in a cat, and now I've said, me, in that situation, react in this way, and it's made it
so
work.
So you put it as in... you did it.
Yeah, I'm
so
in
that,
this.
Rather than.
Yeah, and rather than being a stood back from observation, I've now said, I feel like this. And that is the key to a lot of my stand up. As soon as I put myself in the bit, it becomes funnier. And it becomes.
That's the same with one liners as well. I find that I go, someone said this, and I thought, and then do the joke.
Yes.
Which never works as well as if I relay the conversation as if it actually happened. So that's the same thing, I guess.
Well, it's a magic trick, isn't it? It's smokescreen, but it still works because people want to know how you react in that moment. And people don't want a load of generic observations. People think they do because they watch McIntyre. And not saying this is the interesting thing about McIntyre. He's so good that he smuggles in. You're thinking he's making generic observations. He's actually in every bit he's doing. He is he is in the bit. He owns the bit.
The way he presents it.
And the way he owns that bit makes it funnier. So like, I always think that when you're in the middle of the bit and you're living it, like I've got a routine about being in my last show. Again, this was interesting because at Edinburgh, it never really got the response I wanted it to, which is about me being the only dad at playgroup. And me infiltrating a woman's WhatsApp group and being involved with all these women and going to coffee mornings and being the surrogate mum. And I had this whole bit about me playing off the dads and seeding sort of arguments so they can have them when they get home from work and stuff. And it worked fine. It was a nice sort of like Othello. There's a character in Othello sort of meddling. And it worked really fine. But I, as soon as I added on the tour a bit about me being worried about another dad joining. So I sort of said, oh, when another when another dad joins, I'm going to have to protect my territory. I'm going to have to face him off in the car park. And as soon as I added those, a routine about me stopping another dad joining and threatening him and chasing him away, it got even funnier, to the point where that whole routine got applause breaks then. And it's just interesting.
So you would sell that as in that happened?
Well, it did. The truth of the routine is I am the only dad at playgroup and I am in a woman's WhatsApp group. That is the truth.
Yeah.
But the whole thing of adding the dimension of stepping back and going, well, I'm going to have to protect my territory. I'm going to have to fight off any other dad. And then as you add that together, that came from being on tour, that bit. That bit grew from 3 minutes to 8 minutes. And like, and then it became funnier and funnier and funnier because it's sort of, you're still adding something that people believe. Because they go, well, of course, he didn't do that, but I believe he's now so obsessed with being in this gossip group that he will fight to protect it, you see?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where the stand-up gets really good, because you're not, you're writing stuff that's about you that no one else can write. You see what I mean? When I know you've hit on observational stand-up. That's the level I want to get to, which feels like it's coming from you, but it's still observational, because that's the golden seal. That if you can do something where people laugh at the recognition of, oh, he's a dad at playgroup, he's defending his territory, and that's a funny line. Well, you've got it then, haven't you? You've got the three-pronged attack, you know. There you go.
Perfect. That's really interesting that you just... Because that's totally different. Like, what I do is like, that's just all foreign to me. Like, the fact that a bit can start working just for where you, how you come off another bit. That's really interesting.
Well, also as well, it's context. It's putting yourself in the bit, and it's what is that? I often now look in my Edinburgh shows in particular, is what is that bit saying about me? And if it's not saying anything or moving the theme forward or moving, giving the audience another colour on the canvas, then get rid of it. You see what I mean? The bit's got to justify itself. So, like, there has to be a bit, there has to be a reason why you're doing this. So I've got another bit in my new show, which is like, I realised how envious I was of my toddler. Because her life, she's living like a punk. She's just answerable to no one. That, you know, nothing matters. She's got like an anarchist spirit. And like, so I step back from that and go, what's that say about me? Well, it says that, you know, I'm getting to the point now where, you know, I'm jealous of toddlers, you know, and that puts you in the middle of the bit. That moves the story on, because you're going like, these guys, they are the ultimate in relaxation. And then you've got to make sure that you are in the bit, and the bit sort of moves the audience on. And that's the sort of stuff, those are the sort of skills that I don't want to lose over these next 3 months of not gigging. So I was getting to that point where, that sort of thinking was so ingrained in how I was writing that I need to make sure I maintain, I run the stuff I'm doing through that filter all the time now. Because it stops you writing generic stand-up that's a generic sort of bleat. I mean, I'll give you another example. Is I had a routine about going to festivals, and that never worked that well, because it was just a routine about feeling old at a festival. But as soon as I changed it to, people say there's a comfort in getting older. Well, not for me. I'm kicking against a person I used to be. And then I can talk about that. The stuff got funnier because it's so interesting. Just changing the context and the justification makes the bit have more weight, you know?
So when did you discover that? Did you all of a sudden have an epiphany of like, everything is now much funnier because I think it's
touring and it's doing Edinburgh shows. I mean, you've done more Edinburgh shows than I have, but a lot of it is touring and doing an hour and a half on stage on your own. You don't half get good at analysing your bits. I used to listen back to it, and that's when it clicked for me. When I was funniest is when I I was in the bit and I was owning the bit and making the bit personal. And then
you just observed it.
You just observed it, and Like, I've got routines in my... I do loads of sort of observational stand-up, but I'm trying to do it all through a prism of, you know, Scott Bennett's observational stand-up, not something that, you know... It's interesting because this thing I've got to do in a couple of weeks' time, they want my perspective on self-isolation and how I'm responding. And that's been a really interesting thing to write, because I can't do the stuff like, oh yeah, toilet roll. That's not what it's about. It's how you react psychologically in that situation. And that's exactly how I'd write an Edinburgh show anyway, or how I'd write stand-up for Edinburgh. Because you know yourself, it has to be a cut above, doesn't it? It has to be the most interesting bits of your set, I think. I just do stand-up that's stitched together. I don't try and do any sort of overarching message, but even so, it has to be stand-up that you feel
funny, mate.
Say something.
You do funny.
Yeah, got to be funny, hasn't it? That's the first thing.
It's got to be bloody funny.
Yeah, that's people cracking, forget man. That, though, don't they? That's. I think people.
I think so.
Yeah.
God, cool, man. God, I reckon we got enough there.
Yeah, I reckon
we have. That was great, man.
Oh, thank you,
mate. That was really good.
Thank you, mate. Cool.
Top stuff. It's really interesting. Yeah. I love it, man. You've got something to say. It's good.
Yeah, I do. I think it comes from just being a bit of a comedy nerd as well. I don't just do comedy because it's something you feel you can do. I do it because it's something I'm a bit passionate about, you know, and I've always been passionate about it. But
same, man. And since doing this podcast as well, I've really, like, I was always quite analytical, but I've really looked at everything now.
Yeah. It's a science. It's engineering.
And then I go back through old bits, and I can really make old stuff work now.
Yeah.
Because I've worked out. It's exactly what you said. I mean, I wouldn't use the same theory as you, because that wouldn't work for me, as in literally what we were just talking about. But there are similar things where I go, like when I said, just change it so it happened rather than I just thought this thing. And that makes all the difference. All of a sudden, that goes from a little laugh to a banger.
Absolutely. And I think it is just having that eye and that step. Loads of comics don't step back from their stuff. Loads of comics go, it works, I'm leaving it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fine. But I think if you look at the people that are at the top of the game and have been for years, like, I know how much Sarah Millican works on her stuff because I've seen her doing it.
Yeah.
And I know how much Gary works on his stuff. And I know how much McIntyre engineers his stuff. And there's a reason why it's because they're obsessional. And you have to be with this. I think if you want to get, if you want to have a long career, God hope there's a career when we go back to this, man. I tell you, I hope we
there
can.
Will be.
I hope we can pick this back up where we left off. Do you think we can? I bloody hope so.
I think so.
I genuinely do, man.
I think people will be crying out for gigs. I think it'll go through the roof.
I hope so, because I tell you what, mate, it took me so long to make the decision to make this a job. And I agonised over it for so long. And then just started to become accustomed to it. And then this shit goes down. But
I know,
but
man.
Yeah, it'll I hope fine. So, yeah. Because I do miss it. I miss it more than I ever thought I would.
Scott Bennett!
Hey,
Hashtag Awooga! Hashtag Awooga, Scott Bennett! good stuff. Joel has just informed me that his battery is very low, so we are going to cruise through this. Any feedback at Jokes with Mark? Thanks very much. Anything more for you, Joel?
Go to patreon.com/jokeswithmark for exclusive content.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's a nice way to support the podcast if you've got a couple of spare quid. Down the back of your sofa. Well, down the back of your digital sofa.
And I just put up Rhys James' video footage from the episode where
where
we run through about 13 minutes of my jokes.
There you go. So that's it. If you're not good on the Patreon, stuff. That's what you're missing out on.
Yeah. So there was more from you then, Joel. Is there anything more from you, Joel?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything from you, Mark?
No, nothing more from me, Joel. Hashtag Awooga, everybody. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Get some sleep.
Hold up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.